This is a special edition of the Daily Drum on 96.3 WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141 HUR Voices.
In too many communities around the country, a gulf of mistrust exists between local residents and law enforcement.
He just shot his arm off. We got pulled over on Larpiner.
I told him not to reach for it. I told him to get his hand open.
You told him to get his ID, sir, and his driver's license. Oh, my God, please don't tell me he's dead. Please don't tell me my boyfriend just went like that.
We continue our discussion this hour of Let's Make It Better, a conversation on improving relations between police and communities of color.
Welcome back to Let's Make It Better, a special edition of the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our discussion examining how to improve relations between police and communities of color. From Ferguson to Baltimore, we've seen reports from the Department of Justice criticizing how police operate in poor communities of color. But let's talk a little bit about the future prosecutors, the future defense attorneys who will be in the courtrooms, who will be addressing some of these issues from the justice system. Joining me right now is my guest, Professor Lisa Kroom. She is Associate Dean of Academic Affairs at the Howard University School of Law. Professor Kroom, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you very much.
Let's talk a little bit about the current police and community problem and how it impacts how you teach, if it does at all.
It most assuredly impacts the way that we teach, in part because of the general demographic of our student population. Most of our students come to their first day of law school having had multiple encounters with the police on the streets of their communities, whether on their campuses. So they come to the table with experiences that we find we have to create the space for them to be able to process those experiences and then to determine how best to use their legal education to make systemic change.
How do you create that space? And what impact does that have on why they're in law school?
I think the classes that have entered law school over the past 2 years, and probably the last 4 years, let truth be told, have been made up of students who had their consciousness raised as a result of young people who look like them losing their lives at the hands of the state. So we realized that it couldn't be business as usual, that we had to create the space, and we start as early as orientation, to let them know that whereas in other law schools that might be viewed as outside of what you've actually come to study in terms of the law of it, at Howard, given our history, it is at the center of what it is we expect our students to come to Howard to receive in terms of how the legal education at Howard may in fact be different from the legal education they might get at, let's say, a predominantly white law school.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. This is a special edition of the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. Let's Make It Better. We are examining how to improve relations between police and communities of color. I want to drill down just a little bit more. Are those students and even those that go on to become lawyers and are actively practicing, are they concerned about what awaits them now in the courtroom, in this modern police community climate where you're seeing cases like the ones that we see in Chicago where police are being prosecuted, like the situation that we are likely to see coming out of Louisiana and Minnesota, for example?
I think that for our students, because we make the history of the school, both the very far past history as well as the more contemporary history, central to what they learn. It's part of the context. We've been able to bring alums, recent alums, who have successfully defended relatives who have lost their loved ones at the hands of police officers. So one who comes to mind is Chris Stewart out of Atlanta. He represents Walter Scott's family. Mm-hmm. He has had a role to play with respect to representing some of the members of Bethel in South Carolina, those folks who lost their relatives at the hands of not a police officer, but an attitude and a culture, I think, that is consistent with what one sees in some police departments, that our ability to reach to very recent alums and bring them to students, and students are able to see not someone who has been practicing for a very long time, hence they can't connect, but someone who looks very much like them, or perhaps an older sibling, who's come through Howard, done what they needed to do in terms of getting out of law school, passed the bar exam, and has managed to figure out how to do the work of being a social engineer, staying true to what it is that brought that particular student to Howard. So we feel that if they can see it, and see it done by someone they can relate to, who has the degree that they are wanting to pursue, that it makes it much more real. It's not theoretical or abstract to them, that you can, in fact, make a difference. Now, it might be a difference as it relates to individuals, but the hope is that while you're struggling on the individual level, you're also keeping in mind what kind of structural and systemic and institutional changes need to occur.
Let's talk about yesterday and this scalding hot report that came out of the Department of Justice, their Civil Rights Division, about the police department in Baltimore. It was 163 pages and page after page that essentially said it was almost like an indictment of the culture of the Baltimore Police Department. And we can always say, yes, it wasn't the entire police department. And even the commissioner fired six officers on the day that this came out. What do you think this report says, not only just about Baltimore, but about Ferguson, about Chicago, because it's a national thing?
Well, I think that the Baltimore report is only the most recent report released by the Department of Justice. If you go to the website for the Civil Rights Division of the Justice Department, they have a whole page dedicated to collecting all of the reports that the Justice Department has, in fact, written about police practices and the abuse of state violence. 163 pages for Baltimore, at least that many pages for the Ferguson report.
Exactly.
Newark was subject to the same sort of review. So Baltimore is the most recent one, but I didn't read anything in the Baltimore report that differed a whole lot from what I had read in the previous reports. Mm-hmm. The question then becomes, okay, now what?
Yeah. And speaking of now what, I want to go to the phone lines. We have the Prince George's County Police Chief Hank Stawinski on the line. Chief Stawinski, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate you being a part of this program.
Well, it is more than a privilege for me to join you this evening. Thank you for the invitation.
I want to talk to you about what is happening right now, the culture as it relates to police and communities of color. Do you think that police bear some of the responsibility for the clashes in communities of color? And do they have a responsibility to fix it if that is indeed the case?
Well, I think our entire system of governance is based on the notion that we've all got responsibility for advancing one another and our nation and our interests collectively as a people who have the ability to determine our own destiny. So to that extent, I think there are structures that date back to the founding of this nation. There are practices and policies that are no longer timely. That's the case in any endeavor. Speaking, and I know you were just alluding to some of the DOJ consent decree information coming out around Baltimore City today. You know, that was the circumstance in Prince George's County a decade ago. And structures that needed to be examined, needed to be evaluated, needed to be changed. Practices needed to be made contemporary. I think these are ways that we move towards that better place. But I take personal responsibility in leading the Prince George's County Police to a place where we police in a manner that instills trust in the officers out there on the front line, but also instills trust in the community, because we don't impose the law. We enforce the law in conjunction and in collaboration with the community. I'm a Peelian, ultimately, and I believe police derive their authority to enforce the law from the consent of those who are the community, just as we put our government officials in place at the consent of the governed. So
Chief
that's
Derwinski,
a long way of saying I think we've all got responsibility.
Hold on. I need to take a quick break. When we come back, I have some more questions for you, and I appreciate if you just give us just a moment. This is a special edition of The Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM, Channel 141. Let's make it better. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We'll be back in just a bit.
If you run a business...
The conversation continues now. Now.
This must stop. This divisiveness between our police and our citizens.
Let's make it better.
Welcome back to Let's Make It Better, a special edition of The Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. I want to go back to Prince George's County Police Chief Hank Stawinski. Chief, you mentioned about a decade ago what was going on with the Prince George's County Police Department. Back in 2009, the U.S. Department of Justice ended that years-long oversight of the county police department as a result of excessive force allegations. Here's my question. Since 2009, what has happened, and is what has happened part of the fix in improving relations between police and communities of color?
I believe that what's happened since 2009 is this department embraced more contemporary practices in policing. We institutionalize them through policy, which is why the Department of Justice concluded the terms of our memorandum of agreement. We brought in an independent inspector general, Mr. Carlos Acosta, who had portfolio to inquire about anything across this department. We brought in Julie Parker to be transparent and to make certain that we were communicating to the public effectively and clearly exactly what was going on in circumstances across the spectrum. And then we've continued to make certain that our policing strategies reflect the values of our community to the benefit of our officers and to the benefit of the community. I think it was fundamental in the change that we've made, and I personally deeply appreciate the support that I get from the community personally and the support that I've received as an emissary to my officers from our community in these difficult times. But again, it's got to be a firm commitment that is structurally institutionalized and then supported by people like Carlos Acosta, by people like Julie Parker, and by leadership.
Okay. Prince George's County Police Chief Hank Stawinski, thank you so much for participating in the program. We appreciate it.
It was my privilege to be here. Thank you again.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Let's go to the phone lines. Let's talk to Philip. Philip, calling from Baltimore. Philip, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, thank you. It's a pleasure to me being online right now with you guys. Well, I wanted to say that, you know, if we really wanted to make the changes that's needed, we don't have to look that far, and we don't have to do any real serious training. What we need to do is just re-educate the police department on the rule of law, which is the Constitution. The Constitution protects everybody, and the Constitution gives us these rights. And we have to remember that the police are public servants. I don't understand all of a sudden, you know, the police officers are being elevated over the citizens, but the police actually work for us. And so something is wrong. The dynamics has majorly changed because, you know, the citizens are being policed. I mean, just think about it. They're being policed.
Well, Philip, hold on, because I'd love to have Professor Kroom's comment on that. And thank you so much for your input. You know, he's talked about the Constitution. On the surface of it, it's great. But particularly as it relates to communities of color, as we saw in the DOJ report from Baltimore yesterday, some could argue that the Constitution is little more than a paper shield.
Absolutely. And I think that what we've seen, let's say, with particularly with Alton Sterling and Philando Castile, both of them were licensed to carry guns. They were exercising their Second Amendment rights.
Constitution.
Their constitutional rights.
Yes.
And as a result of exercising their constitutional rights, they were shot. First Amendment rights, same thing. There's a charge that is colloquially commonly referred to as contempt of cop. And it seems that contempt of cop is when an individual is walking down the street and a police officer rolls up next to you and starts to ask you questions. If you say, am I being arrested? Am I being detained? I don't really have to talk to you. Then that is taken by some police officers as justification for charging you with obstruction of justice, charging you with a range of offenses for doing nothing more than exercising your constitutional rights.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're going to take a break, but when we come back, we're going to talk to a student activist right here in Washington, D.C. Let's make it better. Join the conversation. We'll be back in just a bit.
Continues now.
This must stop. This divisiveness between our police and our citizens.
Let's make it better.
Welcome back to a special edition of the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. Let's make it better. Improving relations between police and communities of color. I'm Harold Fisher. Joining me on this particular issue is Miles Peterson. He's a student. He's an activist at Benjamin Banneker High School right here in Washington, D.C. First of all, Miles, thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate you coming in.
Thank you for having me.
We know that there's tension between police and young black men on the streets. Police chiefs are listening to this conversation. As a young man, 15 years old, what do you want police chiefs and indeed police on the street to know about you and your peers?
I just want, first of all, to let them know that I'm tired of being fit into stereotypes that are constantly portrayed through negative media, through the music, through the TV shows that show these black men in bad lights or dark lights. When really, I go to Banneker, I'm really about my grades, I'm really about making positive music. I do a lot of things, but don't see me as what you see on TV. So I think that's one problem where police officers' ideas of black males are usually based off of what they've never seen or what they've seen on TV or through media.
When you walk the streets of Washington, D.C., are you concerned about your safety if you happen to encounter a police officer?
Most definitely. Especially since Trayvon Martin's case, my relationship, even though that wasn't with a police officer, but my relationship with police officers has felt a lot more awkward, scary, not sure what can happen in that situation, even if I don't have an encounter with them. Just seeing them, you know, reminds me of what happened to Tamir Rice, what happened to Michael Brown, if that could be me. So just very similar to Tamir Rice case. I know a lot of people who have BB guns who walked in, who have a BB gun on them just to have fun, just to play, and that could be one of my friends. And it's just sad to see that I can see myself, my story on the news. I can see one of my friend's stories on the news. I can see my brother's story on the news. So that's really the really sad and disheartening thing about it.
What kind of conversations do you have with your friends that are your age about what's happening between police and communities of color? Is there a concern out there?
Oh, there's a very strong concern because our generation through social media has been able to, I think social media has been kind of a crutch and also a helping tool to the younger generation, whereas the younger generation can get more information about the cases, get more involved about our history and more involved about these cases and be better connected with the Black Lives Matter movement. We can start protests. So a lot of my friends are really into the Black Lives Matter protests and understanding what needs to be done in the stop of black genocide by police officers.
Do you think that there is a solution? What responsibility do young people like yourself bear to improve the relationships between police and communities of color?
Well, I think that would actually have to come from the police officer's standpoint first, because once they start coming towards us or coming to our communities and start interacting with us, then we can feel better and more comfortable with them. So say if a police officer every month, police officers come in to the schools, talk with the children, speak with the children on what's going on in the community, helping out the community. If I see Officer Dan every single day, I see this officer every single day, then I have a better relationship with them. So if I go to another state, I don't feel threatened by a police officer, but because I have better relationships with police officers.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Of course, we are discussing the relationship between police and communities of color. I'm talking right now to Miles Peterson. He's a student activist at Benjamin Banneker High School here in Washington, D.C. I want to piggyback a little bit on that, Miles, because you said you think the onus is on the police. But if you do you have police officers that you see normally or regularly, I should say, in your community?
Yes, but some of those police officers I haven't had great encounters with.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Because if you see them in your community, and that goes back to the question, what responsibility, if any, do you believe you or your peers need to grab onto? I mean, would you walk up to a police officer and say, hey, can I talk to you? I mean, is that pie in the sky, Pollyanna? Is that realistic?
No, I don't think that's realistic for a lot of young black males to do.
What about yourself?
I mean, thinking about this conversation now, and I feel like that it should be done, or it's somewhere we have to start, then I would go and say, well, can I talk to you? How are you doing today, sir? But from a culture, especially through rap music, where we have created a strong dislike towards police officers, it's not going to happen. It's not realistic. So I feel like police officers have to first come out and understand where we're coming from first, mm-hmm. and make sure they understand our viewpoints.
Professor Crooms, is what I'm asking unrealistic on a good, calm day when a police officer is driving through the community, slowing down, and a young man like Miles is sitting on his front porch? Is that really unrealistic when we're thinking about the seriousness of the very nature of this issue?
I think in terms of individual-to-individual contact, it might not be unrealistic. I think the unrealistic part is to believe that the individual-to-individual contact is going to change the system and the culture.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're dealing with.
Right.
We've got to look at what policing is supposed to do and what it has historically done and ask the question, is what is happening now that much different from what police were supposed to do at the founding of the country, most assuredly at the end of slavery? I mean, it's not a coincidence that the KKK is founded 18 days after the 13th Amendment was ratified.
I need to take a break. But if you're on the phone, please stay with us. We will be taking your call. That includes Aaron, Z, and of course, Miranda Jones calling from St. Louis. Looking forward to talking to you as well. Let's Make It Better. A special edition of The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on 96.3 WHUR. More of this conversation in just a bit.